Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G. We are back, as we do every Monday between 2 to 3, where we discuss education, we discuss therapy, we discuss how to make the world a better place and how to make ourselves better people, and the whole journey in between, how to influence our families, our friends, our communities, and different tools that we have in the world to help us, and different things that we use in order to grow, learn, understand, discuss. Anything that's on your mind, anything that you would like to discuss or want to hear in the show, or any comments or anything, or just want to join in with what we're about to speak about, because I find it fascinating, specifically today, which we'll get to. 34519 is SMS line, or you could send us a telegram at 061-895-1019. So, as I said, SMS 34519, Telegram 061-895-1019. And I'm just going to go straight into this conversation because it's going to be fascinating. I have here two very special guests, Professor Andreas Lemmer and Dr. Connor Hughes. Right. Dr. Connor Hughes and Professor Andreas Lemmer. And they are from the Top Dogs Therapy Dogs organization, and we're going to be discussing all about the world of emotional support and therapy that comes from dogs. The differences, finally, we'll hopefully have an answer to the difference between a therapy dog and an emotional support dog, and or an emotional support animal, and just about the phenomenal work that we use with and connect with animals. And as I said, so much to understand, so much to learn, so many questions we have. Anything you would like to ask the doctor or the professor or me or anyone, just send it in to 34519 or Telegram 061-895-1019. So, Professor Andreas, I'm going to start with you, as you are the chairman of the organization, chairperson of at Dog, Top Dogs organization. Tell us about the organization. What do you do?
Thank you very much for having us on your show. So I'm very happy to talk about all the work that we do, but also want to just say that what we do is actually nothing novel. Therapy dogs have been used all over the world, and there's actually a very active therapy dog community in South Africa itself. So what we do as an organization is we put dogs that are confident. Dogs that are confident around other people, around other dogs, and other surroundings, and we put them in touch with people who could really benefit from having a dog around them that they can stroke, that they can touch, that they can hug, or just to have them right next to each other. So the clients that we have are, a lot of them are, for example, in frail cares or in retirement homes, where we all know that often residents have to give up their dogs when they move there, and this is actually quite traumatic for them. So we are able to basically provide those residents with some sort of canine contact that just helps them adapt to their new situation.
What you're saying is fascinating, because I would tend to think that when somebody goes into an old age home or needs to give up their dog, that they had a special emotional connection and bond, it wouldn't necessarily help them to have a stranger dog come to spend time with them. Like, I'm trying to think, if I would be in a relationship with someone and I would lose them, I don't know that somebody else would come and fill in that gap. So where does that come into play within that human connection and relationship?
I think, thank you for that comment, because I think it leads straight away into one of the principles that we all have, is that there is no animal, including humans, more in tune to the emotional state of humans than dogs. A dog will pick up the slightest emotional turmoil that somebody's going through that even somebody, a life partner, would never ever realize. So I can assure you that as soon as we walk into the retirement home, into the common area, whatever, you can just see the dog straight away make a beeline for the most vulnerable and the most traumatized person in the room. And people, and stroking a dog, it just releases the most wonderful hormones in anybody.
Okay. Dr. Connor?
Our motto is spread smiles for miles. And one of the things that it's just so predictable, and it makes me smile every time, is we walk into any environment with a group of people who are hurting in some way, and every face in the room lights up. So it isn't just, it's not the same as, it might be the same as missing a person in one sense, but if you'd lost a person and you'd lost the whole of humanity and anybody, any human walked in, you'd throw your arms around them.
Exactly. It's not a replacement. Like, no. It's just a emotional therapeutical connection that will help through the difficult times. So that's amazing to hear from about the work and what you're doing with the older people and older communities and different communities. You are also involved in teddy bear clinics, mm-hmm. and obviously kids or adults or that were hurt and abused. Where does that come into play?
Teddy Bear Clinic, we approached them because myself and another handler had a deep sense that we wanted to get involved with helping children who had been abused in some way. Teddy Bear Clinic has been around for a long time. We got in touch with them back in, I think, 2015, 2016. So we go back away. Teddy Bear is an organization that looks after children from the ages of 3 to 18. And they have over 20 different programs that help those children. None of it is, there is no cost to the children or their families. Most of that is either physical or sexual abuse, but emotional abuse does actually factor in there as well. One of those programs.
Every form of abuse would have an emotional abuse.
Obviously, but some is pure emotional abuse.
Right.
But it's a relatively small piece. One of those programs, when we approached them, we didn't know how we could help. So we sat with the people from Teddy Bear, and what we came up with was they have a wonderful program called the Court Preparation Program. Now, not every child gets involved in this, but hundreds and hundreds and hundreds every year do. And that means that the situation is such that there is a criminal case opened against an individual for the abuse of that child. That means that the child will in some way need to go and testify. And I'm going to say that age range again, from 3 to 18. I've been in a magistrate's court now because I needed to know what happens there. But it is scary when you're a grown-up. Heaven knows what it feels like when you're 6 or you're 9. So those children, they get together once a month, in three areas, in Krugersdorp, Soweto, central Johannesburg, and we take the dogs there to help them learn to be strong, learn to be courageous, learn to be able to say, I don't know, when they're being pushed to answer a question they don't have the answer to. So it's been a step-by-step growth of the program where we have learned how we can work with the children, and we now do 3 or 4 completely different approaches, each of which has helped those children get into court as credible witnesses and get what we want, which is more convictions.
Wow. Okay, so we're going to have to approach right after the short break and see what are the methods. Where does the dog roll in there? What can the dog do to help the child actually feel stronger and help that they are able to say, I don't know? How do they learn that? And many other fascinating questions. Any comments, anything you would like to ask, 34519 is the SMS line. 0618951019 is the telegram.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
101.9 Hi FM. Hi Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back in the middle of a fascinating discussion. I'm here with Professor Andrews and Dr. Connor. They are from Top Dog Therapy Dog Organization, and we are discussing the differences between we're actually not discussing that yet. That's going to come up later in the show. What is the difference between therapy dog and an emotional support animal, etc.? However, right before the break, Dr. Connor, you spoke about bringing interactions between groups of kids that have to testify in court that went through abuse, and giving them the strength from the dogs, the emotional support, being able to stand in court saying, I don't know, being able to stand in court and be strong and give that confidence appearance and actually get the court case properly done in a terrifying situation. What are the tools we use? How does that work when the child interacts with the emotional supports and friendly animal? Does that give them what? What are the tools we have?
I think one of the things that most people don't recognize is that they tend to think of therapy dogs and emotional support dogs as, you pat them on the head and it's nice. This is a very different kind of approach that we work with. There is a lot of science behind what we do. So when a child or an adult, for that matter, interacts with a friendly dog, I mean, obviously, if somebody's really terrified, we're not going to ask them to interact. We don't force it on anybody. But if you're open to interacting with the dog, different chemicals in the body actually start to change very quickly when a human interacts with a dog. And that's probably because for so many tens of thousands of years, we've shared living spaces with these creatures. We like them. They like us. We need each other in some ways. So there are two main brain chemicals that decrease when you start interacting with a dog. It also works with rabbits or cats or birds. Okay. It really doesn't matter. Dogs are easiest because they are most sociable with us. We've been offered therapy rabbits, by the way, but I just had visions of all our Jack Russells and chasing after the therapy rabbits and causing a commotion, so we thought maybe not. So
maybe not at this point. But
those two, so it decreases cortisol, which is the stress hormone, and it decreases norepinephrine, which is it's the adrenaline precursor. So you don't, it lowers the fight or flight issue. And remember, these kids have been abused, and they are being asked, they have to be asked to kind of relive parts of the abuse because they're thinking about the testimony they're going to give. So we want them to not feel that fight or flight, because it impairs clear thinking, it impairs learning.
So when the child is interacting with the animal, and it's reducing the chemicals in their brain, does that have a long-term lasting effect?
Yes and no. What it does is it takes a brain that has forgotten how to trust. It is shut down in terms of trust. It is shut down in terms of being calm. No longer is used to having that as a habitual pattern. So what we're doing, and we're doing it in an unexpected way from the children's perspective, we give them this dog that's just going to roll over and kiss them and wag its tail and generally be cool. What we're doing is we are reminding their brain how to do these emotions that they haven't done for a long, long time now.
And will our brain learn to translate that into human interaction as well?
It does eventually, and we've got quite a lot of evidence of that over the years. That the children start to, that they're reluctant to touch the dogs immediately. It may take a couple of months till they go right up to the dogs and interact. We actually have a giant teddy bear who is dressed as a handler and a life-size cuddly dog, stuffed dog, so that the kids who are too scared to approach the real dogs, they don't get left out. They can go cuddle the things. That was one of the things that
sounds like a good job in the winter, but in the summer, I don't know how you handle that job.
Gets a bit hot. So essentially, the children are, that their brains are being reminded. It's not exactly learning; it's more remembering that they have forgotten. They have blocked the ability to trust.
So is the person that is involved with the kids and the dogs in this situation, let's say you would be there, somebody, do you interact and engage between the child and the dog, or you let the natural connection just start happening?
It's mostly the latter. It's mostly a natural connection. We do not try to shape that interaction, because every child is different. The children will come to us and they will engage with us and they will say, can I do this? Can I take the dog for a walk? That's the most common request. Can I give it treats? To which some of the answer is no. They'll explode if they eat any more treats, because every child wants to give them a whole handful. And a lot of these visits, we have 40, 50, 60 children there. So it is high energy. It is extremely loud, because they're, and that's a good thing. The first time we ever went, back in 2016, the children filed in. There were about 30 of them. And the place was silent. This is a Saturday morning, beautiful Saturday morning in spring. And I just thought, this is dreadful. Because the silence of a group of children, those children shouldn't be silent on a beautiful Saturday morning.
So, but at the same time, how do we support, let's say, a child with sensory challenges or that gets overwhelmed with too much crowd or too much and needs that emotional? They went through abuse. They need that help. They went through a different challenge. Is there something sensory soothing in the relationship with the dog, or
very much
do we need to use other tools to help them? Because I could understand how amazing the energy is. At the same time, taking a sensory sensitive child and putting him in 60 other kids and 60 dogs,
yep.
I could just imagine what it sounds like.
We've had that happen a couple of times now, and the handlers get to know the children. The children can be there for up to 2 years before they can get a court date. So they're being reminded of the problems.
Of the trauma.
Of the trauma month after month after month. That can't be helped. But in terms of a lot of the kids, you'll see them and they're fine. And if they want something quieter, they'll find a way of taking the dog and the handler over to one side and being alone with them. They do find ways of doing
that. Absolutely, that space.
And sometimes they are in such a bad space on that particular day that you'll find them just hanging around on their own. So the handlers are actually trained. We do put them through special training for this, to watch for that, to go over and to offer the companionship of the dog quietly. So, for example, one time I went over and I sat my dog just at the feet of this young woman who was totally shut down. She was just standing against a wall looking at the floor. I put the dog in her line of sight and we waited. And after about, it was a long time, about 2-3 minutes, she just slid down the wall and put her arms around the dog and sat on the floor with her for, I don't know, 10 minutes. And we just left her there.
Amazing.
And eventually she finished it and the dog looked away and shook itself. And she stood up and she looked at me and she smiled and she said, thank you. She didn't say anything else and she wasn't happy. But she was in a different space.
Calmer, in a better space.
I could not have done that. The other human, I'm not a therapist, human therapists couldn't have done that transformation. But the silence with the dog.
So this is the first indication I'm getting a difference between having a home dog to having an interaction with a dog with a trainer or a person involved that will know how to identify and how to push the boundaries and get the dog in the world of the person who needs.
Yeah.
Are there any other differences between, before we get to therapy dogs, just emotional support animals, between raising one, having one at home, and between these interaction groups and support systems that you have in place?
There's a lot of difference in terms of the dogs that can get involved. The key difference here is an emotional support animal or an assistance animal is it works for one person. It doesn't matter if they don't like strangers. It doesn't make any difference.
Okay.
For example, we have a lovely cattle dog at home. He's the most affectionate dog I've ever known, but he doesn't like strangers. He'll never make a therapy dog because therapy dogs are public comfort dogs, if you like. They have to be good with anybody who approaches.
Okay.
So an emotional support dog, the people I know who have them, they are their dog. It's much more along the structure of a seeing eye dog for a visually impaired person.
Okay.
They work with one, and they're trained to do it.
Okay, so that would be a difference. Are there certain breeds that you would say are not emotionally available as other breeds or different dogs or different cases?
Yes.
Andreas.
Yeah, that would be a dangerous question to answer. I think I don't think any breed is disqualified, to be honest.
I thought with humans we're scared to talk about, discrimination and things. I wasn't aware of dogs. Okay. So
for example, I've got a German Shepherd.
Okay.
Which obviously has a bit of a bad reputation historically in this country, because they're obviously associated as police dogs and obviously, we're sort of the frontline dog, in the bad old days, if I can put it like that. So for me, sometimes I find that people avoid my dog because of just the association with him, and they all think, oh, it's a police dog, it's a police dog.
Not also because of the size? Or
The size could also, necessarily. Not necessarily because of the size, but yes, that could also be a factor. And in actual fact, he is the most kindest dog that you can imagine. You know, he's actually completely atypical from a German Shepherd in the sense that he craves attention from other people and is not a high drive dog. So what you probably don't want is something like a Border Collie maybe that have got a very high energy level that will just, they're constantly looking to do something, to be of service in a physical way. Whereas what we really like in our dogs is that they are calm, they will sit and they will lie with somebody and they will just be happy just to be stroked. They do not need a constant chasing something or the like. Okay. But we
interesting, because Nagano was speaking and you mentioned a bunch of Jack Russells, which I always saw them as very energetic.
We don't have many actually.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, but yes, so. But they are obviously, I mean, we've got Irish Wolfhounds, which are part as big okay. as, you know, those are like ponies, if we can put it like that. Mm. And we've also got the tiniest toy Poms as well. And the basic criterion for us to investigate or evaluate a dog is it just needs to be a confident dog. So a confident okay. dog, unfortunately, dogs obviously are a victim of what they experience as when they're young. So obviously if they've had bad experiences in certain situations, that can mark them for life. So we're obviously looking for a confident dog. It's just a dog that has overcome any fears it's had in the past and is able to prosper. We've got a number of rescue dogs in our organization where, you know, it's the handlers or the members of our organization are obviously very much dog-oriented people, and they will go to shelters and they will have lots of rescue dogs. And then as they rehabilitate the rescue dogs, they also start using them actually as therapy dogs as well, which is actually wonderful because now it's exactly the opposite journey. This was a rescue dog often might have been abused by humans, and now actually a rescue dog can actually gain confidence by being with a new family and actually do the opposite and actually give comfort to humans.
So it sounds like you invest quite a bit in the dogs also to give them their confidence and ability to interact with the victims or the people in need or help them. Does the human trauma of the patients or clients that you have rub onto the dogs? Do the dogs or the animals start suffering from that post-trauma? Or, you know, I know therapists can get that stress and burnout. Yes. Do the dogs get that?
Yes. So, for example, there are specific dogs that help abused women. And I know that particularly there, so that's a very focused program. And I know that there, for example, you get massages that you do for dogs. And actually the handlers actually have to do that to their dogs after the sessions with their clients to get the dogs to shake off the emotional turmoil that they encountered as well. And
well, so that's something, so regularly that, after more focused sessions and things, you would have to kind of give some kind of,
I think that it's mostly that's quite unusual. It does happen. It's happened a couple of times at the Teddy Bear Clinic. I have sent handlers home because their dog was too stressed. And it's that's even with experienced dogs. But mostly we've done the science research on this. Mostly the evidence says that the dog's stress levels compared to when they start a visit to the end of it doesn't change much. They neither get more stressed by it nor relax more. So they're pretty, you know,
they're stable.
They're pretty stable throughout that. But there are these particular visits. And honestly, I this is a belief. This is not a scientifically researched fact. I believe that the dogs pick up a lot on the stresses from their handlers. Because we do have handlers who do one visit to Teddy Bear and say, I cannot cope with knowing what's happened to these children. And they don't know in detail. But it's a... What's right. in their heads is generating stress in them, which often is passed on to the dogs. So the more calm that we are and the more confident we are with the situation, the easier it is for the dogs.
So basically the people that are being treated are holding on for the confidence, and that's why the dog's holding confidence, saying that the dog needs to hold on to his handler and his confidence and calmness and being able to create that flow. Okay. What's a therapy dog?
A therapy dog is a kind of public service dog.
Okay.
Therapy dogs work with people who are initially complete strangers to them, and they may see them once and never again.
Okay.
Sometimes we will go every year to a school. So the dogs see these children once a year and only for a couple of years, and then they're gone. But they're still calm and wonderful with everybody that they meet.
Okay, Andres?
I think the easiest way to describe a therapy dog is it's a way, if you are a person who's got a strong community spirit and you want to do good for other people, you've actually got one of your best tools at home, and that is simply just to take your dog to other people, to see other people, and allow your dog to interact with other people. When with my German Shepherd, they're often used for protection work or for high, like service work, like search and rescue and protection work. And my dog is a lover. So he was never going to be able to fill that role. But I thought, what can I do with my dog to be of service? How can my dog be of service? And that's how I got involved with therapy dogs. We do not train.
I was going to ask, is there any training that the therapy dog gets?
There's absolutely no training that happens.
It's just the character of the dog?
That's right. We basically, therapy dogs are born, is what we say. And basically, it's all up to the human, the handler, to allow their dog to be of benefit. But at the same time,
so it's not a specific breed as well.
Not at all. Not at all.
So any dog. Okay, we'll have to go after the break into a bit more detail on that and figure out where that comes into play and how we would identify what kind of dog we have. So we're going to take a short ad break. In the meantime, any questions, any comments, anything you want to ask or add, or even get involved, which we'll get to shortly, 34519 is the SMS line, or Telegram 061-895-1019. Or you know what? If you want to call. Call 01-01-40-30-20, whatever it is. Let's hear your thoughts about the topic. Short break. We'll be right back.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
101.9 Hi FM. We are back. And right before the break, we were speaking about therapy dogs and emotional support dogs. And Andres, you were explaining to me about a therapy dog, that it's almost like a natural gift that your dog has, and the confidence and connected. Take us a bit into that world. How would I identify if my dog is a therapy, an emotional support, a stay-home dog, don't bother them? How do I know that?
So the way I identify is I often go to walks in a dog park, and I observe other people's dogs. And I see, first of all, how does their dog interact with other dogs running around them? Are they shy? Are they running away? Are they trying to play? Are they trying to initiate contact? That's a really good sign. And then once I see that their dog is comfortable, for example, with my dog, then as I walk up to the handler, I look at what their dog does as I approach. If their dog comes out towards me and wants to say hello to me, I know this is going to be a therapy dog for life. So one very important thing that we need...
Is there a way to identify as a person who's not a professional? Because when I go to a house and the dog comes running at me, I never really know if he's excited or really not excited, and just because the reaction would many times be the same. They'll just jump on me and start whatever. But is there a way to know and get that vibe of where the dog is?
So
that's also a gift.
What they often recommend actually is that you should actually never force a contact with the dog. You should never go right into the dog's face. What you should actually do is you should stop maybe 2 or 3 meters away from the dog and see if the dog chooses to come to you. Then you know that your dog, that this dog is very happy to see you. If it's trying to seek out your contact, that's the most important thing. And that's how you'll know whether or not, obviously if the dog's jumping on you and they're excited, you can probably take it for granted that they're happy to see you and they're just, you know, trying to control their they're just too overboyed to see you, which happens.
Wouldn't they run up to me even if they see me as a threat?
Then I think you would probably...
You'd know.
You'd know. You'd know that this is not... Yeah.
Okay.
So they'd probably be barking or... And I think you know... You would know if it's...
You would know.
I have two dogs, neither of whom are yet therapy dogs. And one is a cattle dog, and he will approach anybody who comes to the house.
Yeah.
And he will bark, but bounce backwards away from them. And he's not happy, and you can tell he's not happy. The other dog is a rescue dog, and she's the opposite. She will just walk up to you, wagging her tail, very quiet, and try and nuzzle into your hand. So I know she's got the makings of a therapy dog. Yeah?
And by interacting with other people, she'll become a...
She wants to be with people. She's gentle with people, but she's interested in them. But at the moment, she's not confident around other dogs. So I've got that work to do to help her get confident around dogs so she can be a therapy dog. But you can see the difference between a dog that wants to say hello and be polite. Polite is probably a good word for it. If you meet a polite dog, you're really in with a chance, as long as they also are polite around dogs.
So you can identify it. Okay.
Treat it as a case of manners. It's good manners. Yes.
Okay.
I think very important for us to mention is that we also have something called the Therapy Dog's Bill of Rights.
Okay.
And that is our guiding principle. The whole point is you need to ask your dog's permission to do this with your dog. And your dog will tell you whether or not it enjoys doing these visits or whether they don't enjoy their visits. Which is why, for example, as Con has said, we sometimes have to tell a handler, look, we can see your dog is stressed. Please put him out of this turmoil, you know, and just let him recover because we don't want to scar the dog. And we want the dog has to be the boss and has to tell you whether or not they're enjoying the visit or not.
So when you walk up to, you mentioned you go to a park and you see all the dogs with their owners and you walk up to a person who's there with a dog and you introduce the concept to them, what are the reactions you get? Do people connect to it? Not everybody who has a dog is aware of this world of the therapy and where that comes into place.
Generally so far, I've always found my interactions to be very positive. So anybody who's actually walking their dog is a person who's got their dog's well-being at heart. You know, that's very important. And if you have a dog and you're walking your dog, it means you're a dog person. You're really in love with the idea of having a companion. And you'll be amazed how quickly people would think, wow, that is so easy for me to do. I would love to do that. And I've actually had fantastic recruitment at dog parks using just approaching people who've got the right dog in that sense. And I always tell them, if you're a community-oriented person, which obviously everybody would like to be, if this is how they feel that they would like to be viewed, then you can definitely convince them very quickly.
Okay. We are starting to get to the end of the show. And before we continue, I'd like to hear from each of you a specific experience, a story or intervention that you had with a dog and with a person in need and kind of see what do we learn from that, what do we see from that, and what is our take into our ordinary lives with dogs and humans and connection that we can understand the power of the tool that we have. Dr. Connor.
I've seen so many. Some of them have literally been described by medical staff as miracles, but my favorite one was when I was working with my own dog and I was in a frail care unit, but we were in a lounge, and they brought a lady in who'd just arrived, and they put her into a wing-back chair because she'd had a really bad stroke, an elderly lady, and her head was turned to one side and wouldn't move. So she was leaning against the chair, and they just had to kind of arrange her. And they were holding her hand and patting her hand, and she just looked like she wished it was all over. And I moved my dog so that the dog was sitting next to the chair and took the lady's hand and put the hand on top of my dog's head. Now, that lady had not moved. She was like a puppet that they were manipulating. And the moment her hand realized what she was touching, she smiled. She wasn't looking in the direction of the dog. She just smiled. and, wow. and knowing what she must have been going through and what a difference just that touch of the dog. It wasn't me. It was just the presence of a dog.
And it gave
amazing.
Her that.
Amazing. I reckon that was the first smile she had in ages. And 6 months later, she was being able to say hello when we walked in. Big smiles. Come and see me, my favorite dog, and so on.
And that turning point.
It was a turning point.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable. Andreas, quick story before the break.
One of my favorite stories was we go to hospitals and we mainly interact with the patients there and we see how the dogs can just make them feel better in obviously a very stressful environment. And nowadays hospitals have what they also call trauma counselors, which are basically trained professionals who help the family and also the patient to just deal with their traumatic injury that they had. So these are not the surgeons, whatever. These are just there to help them with their emotional state. And I remember at one of the visits, the trauma counselor begged us, we have to come see this girl. So we were a team of about five, and we went to visit this girl. She's a young teenager, and she was involved in a car accident where she was driving with her father, and her father died in the car accident. She survived. And this happened wow. literally a few days before we saw this girl. And this girl had not spoken or smiled or said anything throughout those days. Her family was there, everybody was there, but this girl was just not responsive. So we walk in with all of our dogs, and we ask, you know, we introduce ourselves, and we say, can we put our dogs on your bed? And she didn't say anything. We just put the dogs on their bed, but you could see she started smiling. And we probably spent about 20 minutes, not only with the girl, but also with her mother, her aunt, her brother, you know, who was all traumatized by losing, obviously, their husband. And the amazing thing was that the trauma counselor then contacted us in the afternoon, and he said the girl spoke for the first time and wanted to go home.
Wow. Wow. Hearing that inspiring stories, and both of your stories, which are fascinating, I think we're going to have to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll see how people can get involved. And if you do have a dog, and if your dog is that emotionally in tuned, and anything you can do, how you can actually help the community. A short break, and we'll be right back.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
1.9 FM, Reggie. We are back, and we're at the end of a conversation. I actually had a fascinating conversation here with Professor Andreas Lemmer and Dr. Connor Hughes. Okay, I'm going to get it right, Dr. Connor. And we spoke about the different special things and the amazing work you guys are doing with dogs for people in that connection, that human connection and emotional connection. And right before the break, you spoke about extremely emotional, special moments and stories. Any of our listeners are hearing you. I don't know if they have dogs or they don't have dogs. Is there a need? Is there a room? What can we do in order to support other people, learn about this, and help each other within the community? Andreas.
Yes, so we have, so we're not the only organization that does this. There are a number of therapy dog organizations in the country, and they all have Facebook pages. And I welcome all listeners to inquire with them directly and just see if they, if you know, find out more about their organization and how they do things.
Okay.
And so that's Therapy Dogs of South Africa. They're on Facebook, and you can find some therapy dog organizations there. And generally, the most important criterion we're looking here for is somebody who's got time, either during the week or on weekends, to go with their dog to the different organizations and see how, you know, and see if it's for them. Sometimes we also just allow people just to observe a visit and see if this is for you or not.
Okay, amazing. Your message?
Just one thing I would say is that if you haven't got a dog and you like dogs and this really inspires you, we do have kind of background roles. I am desperately in need of people to help me with organization around the teddy bear clinic visits, about the way we run them and the extra new things we want to do. those people don't need to have dogs, but I really could do with some help. And that's a very personal plea. But yeah, you don't have to have a dog to get involved with us. We would love to have you come with us to visit and do different kinds of work, if that appeals to you and you've got time to do it.
Amazing. Thank you so much for that and for being with us. Professor Andres, as the head of the organization, your message to the community.
I think my message would be
vision to the world.
Vision to the world is that there's no animal better to make other people happier than a dog. And I think every dog person or even any cat person will probably feel that very strongly. And this is a way for you to spread that love to other people who are not so fortunate.
And be aware there's a lot of people that don't have that ability. And the beauty of you being bringing the people that have and don't have together is amazing. And thank you so much for the work you're doing. It's been a fascinating show and discussion. And look forward to being in contact and seeing what we can do, because there's a few ideas I have in mind, but that we'll chat after the show. Thank you for being with us today. Thank you for the great show. Thank you, Craig, for managing the show. Thank you, Sana, for putting the interview together. We will be back next week, Monday, 2 to 3, as we do every week. In the meantime, stay safe and just think of something good you could do for someone, something we could learn, grow, and achieve, and have a beautiful future together.